Professor from Wisconsin, who is going to give us 5 days of lectures, two lectures every day, on the astrology and philosophy behind the vital body. So, without much ado, I'm going to let Richard introduce his first talk.
All of these 10 talks are meant to be a set. And there are two parallel subsets. One is astrology and the vital body, and one is called building the soul body. Now, we're going to barely do astrology in the astrology talk, so don't look for anything profound or anything highly sophisticated. We're trying to get at ideas, and in these talks, probably there will be more philosophy than there will be astrology. The astrology is merely to augment or to expand on some of the philosophical ideas. The talks that are later in the evening or the later talks are the more important talks because they are the subject that is most important to all of us as students of the Rosicrucian Fellowship. Now, what we're trying to do is very difficult. Because our current astrology that we're in, we do horoscopes and things like that, is not suited. It's suited for the physical body and our birth here on the dense physical plane. And so, since all of the other vehicles of consciousness, the vital body, the desire body, the mind, and such are related to the dense physical body when we have been reborn, we can get at them indirectly, and that is what we're going to do. Now, there are several different kinds of astrology. First, there is the astrology of horoscopes, which is what most of us are familiar with. That is basically called judicial astrology. Some people call it natal judicial astrology, and some people call it genethliacal judicial astrology. And in that, there are many, many varieties, as anyone who has ever studied astrology has found. Some people use the first breath as the time for the horoscope, which is what the Rosicrucian Fellowship does. Some people take the time of conception, which is a difficult matter, but by working backwards, you can usually find it. But before those methods were developed, at the conception, for example, of a prince, there was an astrologer in the room at the moment of conception, if you can believe that, but it was really the case. Then there are the different kinds of zodiacs. We use the tropical zodiac, which we call the intellectual zodiac. There are also several varieties of sidereal zodiacs. And so there are all kinds of combinations there. Then there are all kinds of house systems, and there are different systems of aspects, and then all sorts of planets and asteroids and things like that. Points and parts and nodes and more things you can put into a horoscope than you can keep in your mind at one time. Putting the possibilities all together, there are probably several thousand different kinds of astrology. Now, we're going to follow the tradition of the Rosicrucian Fellowship, and we're going to keep it very, very simple. We're going to use the tropical zodiac, and we're going to use Placidian houses, and we're going to use the 10 basic planets, the moon's nodes, and at most the part of fortune, but when we get into the horoscopes, we're not even going to do much of that. The thing about astrology is that it is a world unto itself. When I was a young man, I got involved with playing with bridge. Especially, I played a lot of bridge when I was in college as a way to escape classes. You know, we always try to escape our responsibilities. And bridge is a world unto itself because each hand of bridge is like a rebirth. And it has its own little drama to it, and you can get lost in that world and not in the real world. So when we're looking at astrology, we always want to look at what astrology points to. We want to look at the reality. Now, judicial astrology, as we're going to be doing it, is symbolic. It is symbolic of our relationship to the cosmic environment. That's one way of looking at it. As spiritual students, the horoscope points to the archetype. The archetype is the thought form that is the basis of all of the basic thoughts, emotions, actions, and physical deeds that someone is going to do. One constructs, usually with help, the thought form, the archetype of a life before coming to rebirth, and the rebirth is the carrying out of that archetype. So when we're looking at a horoscope, we're looking at something that points to something else. Of course, in doing this, we have to always be intuitive and creative. The interpretations that worked for the last horoscope will not work for this horoscope because people are becoming more creative. If we had two people or three people and gave them the same subject and the same amount of canvas and the same amount of paints, we wouldn't expect the same painting. One might do something more abstract, one might do something more representative, one might have more skill, and one might have less skill. And this is exactly what we're doing when we're working with horoscopes. The ingredients are the same. The cosmic substance is the same, but people use it in different ways, and the astrologer must be intuitive in order to be able to work with it. Now, there are other kinds of astrology, and for a few minutes, we're going to look at some of those other kinds of astrology. We're going to look at one that is most important, and that is cosmological astrology. I'm assuming that most of you are somewhat familiar with the Rosicrucian cosmo conception. In part two of the cosmo conception, there is a very brief rendition of the evolutionary creation in which we are taking part. It is very complex, but the key to it is astrology. The periods have astrological names, and the revolutions have astrological names, and this is something much different than a horoscope. This is cosmological astrology. Cosmological astrology is truly an initiate science. Not being an initiate, I can only be an intuitive speculator about what is going on. The difference is that when we're working with natal astrology, we're looking at a symbol that is without, and we're trying to work inward into the character. When we're working with cosmological astrology, we are looking at the stuff that is behind the creation that works its way out into the creation itself. So it's about from within out rather than from without in. Fortunately, the planets and the names that are given to the different periods and things in cosmological astrology are the same things that are used in judicial astrology. And this goes back to the basic unity of the entire cosmos. There is an occult maxim that says everything is in everything. The universal spirit is in the flower and in the total of creation and in every atom of that creation. And if a person is intuitive, one can focus on anything within the cosmos and be connected to the whole or any other part of the cosmos. This means that what we see, talking about revolutions of consciousness in cosmological studies, including cosmological astrology, is related to the orbits of the planets. And for quite a few years now, there have been mathematicians and spiritual philosophers that have tried to figure out the relationship of the orbits of the planets to the revolutions of consciousness, and they have all been baffled in the process. Madame Blavatsky said that these secrets, the reason for these things being kept secret, is itself something that must be kept secret. It's one of those things that because human nature is what it is likely to pervert the truth, and it is said that the secrets of the relationship of the orbits of the planets relative to the revolutions of consciousness in cosmology is that way so that people would not try to take advantage of it to their own ends. In these talks, we're not going to try to do anything profound like that. We're going to just look at some simple horoscopes and from them try to understand some things about the nature of the vital body. Unfortunately, it's hard to tell exactly when the vital body is born. So we can't make a horoscope for the birth of the vital body. Now we know that the vital body is usually born about the time that there is the changing of teeth, which is followed by the period of rapid growth. But precisely when is not something easy to determine. Whereas we do have the exact marker of taking the first breath for the birth of the dense physical body, and then we just have to work indirectly from there. So let's begin by looking at some simple cosmological facts from the Rosicrucian cosmic conception and see how they can be how they work in cosmological astrology. Now, in doing this, we have to remember that what we're doing is very, very simple things, very beginning, very ABCDarian things. And we must remember that in doing this, we have to appeal to our intuition, and we have to appeal to our observation, and we have to be willing to test or try everything that we study. Some of you, when we look at these horoscopes, might be much more skilled in astrology than I am, and some of you may have much more intuition than I have, and you may be able to see much more in them. In fact, we're only going to look at a very few things in each horoscopes. And that's perfectly all right. I don't mind that people know more than I do or that they are more intuitive than I am. It is good, though, that we all dig in and do something with this material. So I'll be very happy if any of this helps you to do your own independent thinking and you're not just looking for knowledge that you're going to be told some truth or something like that, rather than being inspired to see for yourself. Now, the Rosicrucian cosmic conception points to something that is very, very deep. Is something that is beyond our understanding. Most of us have a hard time picturing in our consciousness four-dimensional objects. There are books that will help you develop four-dimensional perception, but when we think of things that are multidimensional, up to seven or more dimensions, it's a very difficult process. Now, the Rosicrucian cosmal conception tells us that the beginning of the vital body was in the second period of our solar evolutionary creation. That period is called the sun period. And at that time, we were plant-like. That is to say, we had already passed through a mineral-like state. Not exactly a mineral state, but a mineral-like state. And in that mineral-like state, we were worked on in the same way that we work on minerals. We make all sorts of things, like all of these wonderful devices for recording things, and we experienced form by being worked on and being given many forms. After that first period, which is called the Saturn period, because it had the character of Saturn. And the character of Saturn was there before there was a planet Saturn. When we're talking about cosmological astrology, we're talking about something that lives in the consciousness of the divine. And it becomes manifest when there are planets in the planets, but it is manifested in many other things. I'm sure you're all familiar with correspondences where this plant is ruled by this planet, is the way it is usually said, or this country corresponds to this sign of the zodiac and things like that. This is because the character of the astrological signs and houses and planets and all of the parts of astrology are in the consciousness of the divine, and they become manifest in these different things working together and sometimes working together by working against each other. So we had gone through a mineral-like state and we had rested in a cosmic night before the sun period. And in that cosmic night, after having taken many different shapes and forms, when we were together with all of the other beings in the cosmos, it sunk into us that you can have a form that changes shape. And you can have a form that changes size and that lives. So in the sun period, we commenced to learn how to build forms that live and grow and morphologize and to do all of those kinds of things. This was done with the help of great spiritual beings called Lords of Flame, which are associated with the sign Leo. And we, as becoming plants, drew from the Lords of Flame in the same way that our current planets draw from the sun. Only the word draw is probably too much of a proactive word. We probably more received, because we were only capable of reception at that point and not so much of reaching out. We did grow toward these spiritual beings, but that is not quite the same thing as reaching out. So we were plant-like in our existence. And in this plant-like state, we could only build a body that grew and changed shape by having something within the dense physical form that allowed that. Things always work from within out, which means we have to go all the way back to the beginning each time. It's now like if we want to build a bigger house now, we just add another section on. But when we want to develop a new property or a new capability spiritually, we go right back to the beginning and we come out with a new addition. And in this case, the new addition was a vital body that was capable of growth. This is something that takes enormous amounts of time. From this, it is obvious then that the rulers, the basic rulers of the vital body, even as we use it in our modern astrology, are Leo and the Sun. Leo has a lot to do with vitality. We all know, for example, that Leo rising is the rising sign that usually has the greatest vitality, the stamina that just never quits, and it has the recuperable ability so that it always comes back really quickly. Now, two periods, or almost two periods, have been completed since the sun period. We went through the moon period and were animal-like, and now in the earth period we are human-like. So we have other vehicles even within the desire body, within the vital body, and still other vehicles within that. By now, the vital body is in its third stage. And in its third stage, the third stage is the animal-like stage. So though the vital body still has the primary function of giving energy, of giving vital life, of giving us the ability to change shape and to heal and do all the wonderful things that the vital body does in maintaining the physical body, it is in its animal-like stage. And animals are beings that are capable of going toward what they want. And this means that our vital bodies are capable of sense perception. That is, we can reach into the outer world and into the inner worlds, and we can perceive things. Now our vital bodies really can reach out toward light. And that's the state that we are at now. All of these things are indications of the nature of our vital body at present and how the form of Leo works for us at this time. Now, by now, in the human stage, we have become self-conscious beings. The Spirit of Truth, our focus of the divine universal spirit, dwells within all of its vehicles of consciousness. And at such a time, we cease to be creatures. We cease to be beings that are worked on from without, and instead we draw on the Spirit and give. Leo and the fifth house and the sun are signs of giving. So we're talking about our vital body is now something that is not just receiving and sustaining, it is associated with giving out, outpourings of energy. And we see that in all the beings that have vital bodies, when they have that quality of life, it sustains them and gives them strength. For example, if we take a plant which has been vitiated, it becomes limp and it sags. Whereas if it is revitalized, like putting it in the water, or if it is a living plant giving it water, the etheric energy enters into it, it regains its turgor, and it has a great strength and viability. Now, initiation, that which is what we as mystery students are all seeking, initiation is an accelerated living of evolution. Everything that is in us, it has been built into us by the divine hierarchies, but only as potentials. So when we are creatures, we become beings that are capable of receiving or drawing and taking things into ourselves. When we become creators, we take all of those potentials that have been built into us and we develop them by giving out. Initiation is an intensified or an accelerated process of giving from our divine being through all the things that have been given to us. Now, initiates are special people. And they are people who live lives of great intensity that go beyond normal lives. Now, astrology is one form of symbolism. Another form of symbolism is mythology. And in mythology, the heroes or the heroines are symbolized by the sun, and they usually have trials. And each of those trials develops something within their basic character, and if they succeed at that trial, they step another step forward in becoming divine. Now, in Greece, probably the most famous of all heroes was Heracles. The Romans called him Hercules, which is the name that most people are familiar with. But Heracles, who represents the first really Western hero, is the hero's hero, so to speak. And Heracles had 12 trials. They were set out for him by Hera. And those 12 trials were clearly stated in Greek mythology as a path of apotheosis. They were the rungs on the ladder between the human stage and becoming a divine being. And what we're going to look at for just a second to get the beginning of an idea of the sun as the representative of the hero and representative of the vital body, let's look at a little bit of one fragment of the 12 labors of Heracles. Now, in cosmological astrology, we are taught that the esoteric is often the opposite of the exoteric. The example that is frequently given is that in the age of Taurus, Taurus is when the ascendant was passing through the constellation of Taurus. The descendant, which corresponds to the individuality and the esoteric hidden part of things, was passing through the opposite sign, Scorpio. And so at that time, the esoteric side of the age of Taurus was associated with the serpent. So that we have the Uray in Greece and the Nagas in India, and among the Gnostics of the time, the serpent Gnostics were called Ophites. And if you read the Greek for when the biblical Jesus says, "Be ye wise as serpents," the word that is used there is the word that is the basis of Ophiuchus. He was talking about the Ophite Gnostics. So sometimes the opposite sign represents the esoteric. In another way, the opposite sign can mean the macrocosm versus the microcosm. Now, we are told in the Rosicrucian cosmal conception that the sign of Pisces represents the total of our humanity as a life wave. It represents the physical body of our life wave. The opposite sign, Virgo, is associated with the microcosmic humanity. That is the body. And to this day, the health and care of the dense physical body is associated with the sixth house. If we follow this back another step, one step above us, or one stage beyond us in the ladder of the gods, or Jacob's ladder, are the angels. And the angels are associated with Aquarius. And the opposite sign is Leo. And Leo rules the vital body, just as we have seen. The individual, the microcosmic etheric world that we make for ourselves. Now, the very first labor, by all the renditions, you know there are different mythographers that have different renditions of the 12 labors, but they all agree that the first labor was the slaying of the Nemean lion, which was terrorizing the people of Nemea. And without going much into the story, he has to choke the lion to death, just like you choke a fire to death, because clubs wouldn't, Heracles had the club and he had the arrows and things like that, and they didn't penetrate the lion at all. So he had to go into hand-to-hand combat with the lion and choke it to death. And then he wanted to flay it. And the only thing that would flay the lion was its own claws. This is a very important occult principle. You have to use the laws, the stuff of the world itself, to conquer that world. You can't solve emotional problems with the mind, and you can't solve mental problems with the emotions. Emotional problems have to be solved emotionally. The mind, the desire body and the emotions in it can be controlled by the mind, but the problems have to be worked out according to the laws of the desire world. And the same is with the etheric body. It has to be tamed and it has to be controlled and made our own by the laws of the etheric world or the etheric subdivision of the physical world. And that's what the flaying means. And ever after, Heracles wears the lion's pelt around him. And as long as he is wearing it, he's invulnerable. Nobody can harm him. Now, all of these things are precisely what the Rosicrucian philosophy teaches us. We don't have to practice psychic self-defense or things like that. If we love and if we serve, we develop a diamond-hard vital body. We walk in light, and we cannot be harmed. Of course, that's a long step away for most of us, but this is the ideal we're all aiming toward, and this is exactly what the 12 labors of Heracles, the first labor tells us. Now, that it's the first labor shows that Max Heindel knows what he's talking about. It shows that he knows the history of the mysteries in the Western world, because many times Max Heindel says, all occult development begins with the vital body. This is why we are spending 10 talks talking about the vital body, because all of our occult development begins here. We can't leave the body and go into the inner worlds if we do not have a rich enough soul body. We just fall asleep. We do that every day. If we have a rich enough soul body and we learn how to put our attention in it, we wake up or we stay awake on the other side. Now, we could say much more about the myth, and we could talk about other parts of the myth, but we have the whole idea. The whole idea shows us, again, from mythology and cosmological astrology in another way, that the vital body is ruled by Leo and the sun. I have a tendency to get lost in my notes. I have a tendency to get lost in general. I have Neptune on the ascendant, and sometimes I get very much distracted by things and I tend to get lost. But I've gotten wise, and modern technology is a wonderful thing. I now have one of those little global positioning things. And I spent several days around Redlands in Los Angeles and Ventura and places I had never been before. And you know, when you get on that, I was up at the Los Angeles Center. I gave a couple talks up there on Sunday. And you try to get back on the Hollywood Freeway from there, and it's not an easy thing. And you just have to trust the voice. You punch in the address that you're going to, and it says you go 250 feet and you turn left. Of course, I chose a woman's voice because I'm a divorcee because I never learned how to listen to the to the commands of my wife. Just a few comments before we look at the horoscopes. We're going to look only at three horoscopes, and we'll probably be less than an hour today. Some days we'll run a little bit long, but I'll try not to do that at all. We're not going to look at entire horoscopes. We're only looking for one thing in each horoscope. And we may comment on other things, but it's not going to be comprehensive, and it's not going to be total. Some cases we may bypass the most important things of the horoscope just to get at the one thing that we want. We're not going to be especially deep, because to be especially deep you have to familiarize yourself with the horoscope for a long time. I have a course that's been going on that's in its 10th year. And in that 10th year, in those 10 years, we've worked with the same 16 horoscopes and progressively have gone deeper and deeper into them. And it's only when you're familiar that you can get that deep at all. We're going to look at simple ideas, and we're going to look at things that epitomize certain points. These are not always the best horoscopes that one can get, but it's very hard when you're trying to find epitomes to get exactly what you want. So we'll do the best that we can with the horoscopes that we have. This is the horoscope of the famous writer, Alexandre Dumas, who wrote all of those swashbucklers. And when we look into it, we encounter problems. And we run into one difficult problem in relating cosmological astrology to genethliacal astrology. And that is Max Heindel, with his seership, agreed with Paracelsus in his seership, in that most of the astrological influences are in the desire world and strike the desire body. So anything that relates to the vital body has to perforce be, well, that's a double one, has to be indirect. You'll never find people are always looking to find the astrological influences in the ethers. They're in the ethers, but that's not the real source. The real source is in the desire body, and until people have desire clairvoyance, they're never going to be able to see those things. Now, yes?
Can you move the diagram up a little bit?
All right. Now that we know who it is, we can do that. Oops. Oh, this way. Is that all right? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, all right. It's when you're working, I don't like portable computers. They're very difficult to work with, and they're very difficult, if you have a problem with them, they're very difficult to fix and very expensive to fix. And it's just too valuable a piece of equipment for somebody that, like me, who bangs around with things. All right. We are trying to get at answering the first problem, and that is, does the etheric realm and the vital body have a flavor? Is there a flavor to the desire world and the desire body? And the answer to that question is both yes and no. Now, in the English language, we have a word that has several different meanings, and that is the word character. We say that something has the character of iron, or something has the character of cotton, or the character of this thought is of such and such a nature. Character usually applies to that internal nature. The Saturn period is of the character of Saturn. And so when we're talking about spiritual hierarchies, and we're talking about vehicles that relate to those hierarchies, the answer is yes, the vital body and the etheric subdivision each has a character of its own. But that character is in general. All of the details are not there. In fact, we're going to work on the details in the next four talks. So this is, what we're trying to look at with this first horoscope is the character of the vital body. And the character of the vital body is indicated by the gusto that it has. It is solar. It is leonine. It doesn't give up. The desire, the vital body is such a thing that it can't be dissuaded. Life is like that. Everything that has a vital body is hard to defeat. You know, you have a volcano, and a few weeks after the ash has been dumped, you find lupins and things like that, those tough Marshall plants pushing through the ash and growing. And so what we're looking at here is sort of a romanticized version of the character of the vital body as being leonine. We're not saying that the vital body is necessarily a swashbuckler kind of thing with sword fights and things like that, but there is a pride that it has. It's a, you know, it doesn't happen so much when you're older, but when you're young and you're filled with energy, it's a wonderful feeling. It's a euphoria, an energetic euphoria that you feel the strength of things, and it's wonderful just to be vitalized and carrying through. Now that's what happens with the chart of Alexander Dumas. He has that character. He is trying to show that. He tries to show that in all of his writings. Now, the vital body is in some ways almost undefeatable. It is a great testament to the desire body that it can tire out the vital body as much as it does so that we have to fall asleep. Back in the 1940s, and if you look into an archive, you can find it. In the 1940s, they did a photographic essay. This photographer was working somewhere where there was a parking lot that had 6 inches of asphalt. And one day he noticed a crack in it. And every day he took a picture. And pretty soon the crack was crossed, and pretty soon it was raising up. And at the end, what it was a mushroom that you could take and break with your own fingers. But it broke through 6 inches of asphalt in order to come out. Now that is the power of the vital body. That is, you know, it's undefeatable. That's the character of it. There are other stories along the same line, but we have to not get too carried away with all that. So this horoscope has the sun in Leo and Leo rising. In fact, all of our horoscopes are going to have that because we're trying to get at different aspects of the basic vital body. Now, in this case, writing and the ability to write is indicated by Mercury, and it's indicated by the third house. If we look in Virgo, there are three planets in Virgo, which shows that he has a very fastidious nature about words and what you can do with words, and that's quite remarkable. But the writing itself is indicated by the third house. Now the sun is sextile to Uranus. The sun is sextile in a rare fixed sign sextile with the moon, and the moon is trine to Uranus. And Uranus is a planet of romanticism. So we can see that even though he has the basic leonine nature, the way it works out is he romanticizes it and carries it out in that way. Now it's an interesting thing if we try to figure out what his motivation in doing all of this is, because I'm assuming that most of you have studied some astrology already and are familiar with it. John probably is much more familiar with it than I am. The 12th house sometimes suffocates the sun, so that it doesn't get a chance, because it's under the labor of all kinds of memories that are undigested from the past. And we can see here the reason for his writing about these things is there's a kind of nostalgia for the past, and he's trying to relive the past through the glory of his romanticized heroes in his novels. All right, I think that's about as much as we're going to say about that one. All right. I'll first put it here so you can see who it is. This is Zelda Fitzgerald. I have a penchant for choosing unusual people. Does everyone know who Zelda Fitzgerald was? Zelda Fitzgerald was the wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald, the famous novelist. She was shockingly beautiful. She was a Southern belle and was almost overwhelming in her beauty. And part of the beauty was the sun is trine to Jupiter in an extremely strong trine, and she has this positivity, like, I can do anything, I am good at anything. And when you find a beautiful person and they have that beautiful attitude about things at the same time, it's almost overwhelming. Now this brings out another aspect of the vital body. Jupiter expands. Whatever planet it is with, it expands and magnifies it greatly. And so, in this case, the sun is in Leo. And Leo is on the ascendant, so there is a magnification of vitality. This person was unbelievably vital. The sun represents self-identity, both in the higher self and in the lower self. Both egoism and the higher self-appreciation are there. It's sort of right at that middle. If you're familiar with the diagram of the stereopticon, where spirit meets matter, right in the crux between the abstract mind and the concrete mind, the sense of self is right at that crux where they meet. And so the sun represents the way we look at ourselves. Zelda Fitzgerald looked at herself as a being of vitality, and she was very positive about her vitality. On one hand, she was what is called a flapper. Back in those days, they sometimes called them good time girls. And she loved to party. But she loved to do much more than that. She loved to be active until she was so active that she spent all of her energy, which was quite something. Well, I'll get to some of the details in a little bit. And when all of the energy was spent, then something else kicked in. The Saturn being opposite Neptune kicked in. And Saturn opposite Neptune is the classic for depression. So what we're talking about here is someone that in the modern parlance is called bipolar. It used to be called manic depression. I must warn you, this is not the only way that manic depressiveness can be found in a horoscope, because it can be found in other ways. But there's a really big lesson in this. If you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And if you identify yourself with energy, when the energy runs out, you come down. And when you find vital body manic depressives, they are that because they have identified their character too much with energy. And that's one of the dangers of it. Now, the amount of energy that she had was incredible. In her late 20s, She was a painter. And if you look on the web, just put in Zelda Fitzgerald, do Google images on Zelda Fitzgerald, and you'll see some really vivid paintings. She puts a lot of life into them. At the same time, she was also writing novels and short stories. In fact, the literary scholars now find that a lot of F. Scott Fitzgerald's things were lifted right off of her things. And he depended on her greatly because he got too much into partying himself and didn't have that same kind of creative gusto that she did. She was, you know, she was really a Leo in terms of giving. What's even more remarkable is that in her late 20s, she became a ballet student. When most people are quitting ballet, she was getting into it. And so between all of these, and she did quite well at ballet for starting late. She was doing as well as other people were, and it was because she practiced so much. And she practiced so much because she had so much energy. So between the writing, the painting, the ballet, and partying, for 3 or 4 years, she was awake almost around the clock and energetic. Not surprising that the energy should go down. So this shows a really strong, strong vital body. But there are problems with a really strong vital body if you're not in control of them. There is always the danger of homosexuality or of transsexuality if the vital body becomes very strong, especially if you identify with it. And the vital body of a woman is masculine, polarized male. And so there were those tendencies in her. Now, if we look at this, this is a really interesting chart, in that the two most feminine planets, Moon and Venus, are conjoined together in Cancer, which shows that she had an extremely feminine side. Everything else is in masculine signs. So we can see that there was an emotional bipolarity between the masculine and feminine in her, and the same way that there was an energetic bipolarity. Now, the way it works is in male charts. I don't want to start something really bad, but I'm talking about a mild generalization. In a male chart, when either of the strongly masculine planets are together with the spiritual feminine, Uranus, that is, if Mars and or the Sun are in problem. I'm sorry. If either the feminine planets is in touch with the spiritual feminine, that is, if Uranus forms difficult aspects with either the Moon or Venus in the male's chart, that indicates a likelihood to homosexuality. In a female's chart, if either the masculine planets, Sun or Mars, it has a difficulty with either Neptune or sometimes Pluto, it is a tendency toward homosexuality. There are other ways that homosexuality can be found in horoscopes. It's a very big, complex thing. In this case, she has the Mars conjoined to Pluto, the identification with the strongly masculine vital body, and so she had bisexual tendencies. So this is one of the things we have to be understanding. There are these people, you know, that believe, transsexuals that believe that they were meant to be a woman, as if God made a mistake. And it's because they have a nostalgia and they are so much identified with the vital body that they go and have a physical operation to make themselves like the opposite sex. Of course, they're thwarting one of the primary purposes for their rebirth. I don't mean to say that to judge them, to say that they're morally bad or wrong or anything like that. It's just to say that you can make those kinds of mistakes. All right, I don't know. So at any rate, This is a horoscope who lived someone who lived by vitality. She had her own 12th house matter with the sun in the 12th house. She spent her vitality after those 3 years' time, and before she was age 40, she died in an insane asylum. Very sad to see somebody with that much talent, but of course it was a bright flare while it was there. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Were there children with the fifth house of the Saturn?
I don't think there were children at all.
What?
She had one child. Okay. See, there's always somebody who knows more than I do. All right, last horoscope we're going to look at. Everybody knows this horoscope really well. This is the horoscope of Max Heindel. One gets kind of creepy talking about Max Heindel here. What do you say about somebody like that? This is somebody that gets well beyond the horoscope. This is somebody that had a strong vitality. And somebody that had a vitality that never quit. He worked and worked and worked until he worked himself to death. I had a friend that had a leonine character like that when I was in high school, and he would never give up. And one day, one of the bigger kids, older kids, got a hold of him and put a bear hug on him and said, "Say uncle." He wouldn't say uncle. Kept pressing harder and harder with the bear hug, and he never said uncle until he passed out. He still never said uncle. It's that kind of quality. The vital body is something that gives strength, that gives life. It gives imperious power. In this case, the moon is trine to Neptune. The moon and sun and ascendant, all the three major things are in Leo. So you can see there's exceptional vitality here. The moon associated with Neptune in the trine indicated his ability to not only be very vital, but to manipulate vitality, to spiritually manipulate it. He could draw energy off of things, such as in the first stage of magnetic healing, when you draw the miasmatic ether off of someone, and then he would sacrifice some of his own vitality and give it to the person until they could come back on their own. This is a very good indication, a very good example of somebody who has the spiritual ability to manipulate vital energy. But he understood, if you read his healing works, Max Heindel tells us that people who are healers, again, he quotes from Paracelsus, it is the duty of the healer to lend his will to the patient until the patient can get on their own and then withdraw the will and the person goes forward on their own. This is someone that obviously had the will to do all of that. Now this is, I don't want to say a whole lot about this chart, especially I'm saved by the bell. It's exactly the time that we're supposed to be quitting. Sometimes when one is under the blush of vitality, one doesn't realize how strong one is. Leo is the sign of lions, and a lion with one swat can kill a very large animal. It has that kind of power. And I think this is one of the things with Max Heindel. Max Heindel had this kind of power, and he didn't realize that other people didn't have that sincerity and couldn't keep up with that kind of power. He was very much known as a firing boss who would fire somebody at the drop of a hat. This is also the man that said all of us should be able to master retrospection in a few weeks' time. Anybody who's tried it and has tried it for years knows that is not a simple task to accomplish. All right, let us close with saying the Rosicrucian Student's Prayer. O God, increase our love for Thee, so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight, O Lord, strength and our Redeemer. Well, thank you very much.
The program will be following that schedule,
and
it has the student print on the inside, so you'll have it.
Always.
It's good seeing you. Thank you for coming clear down here.
Well, we have another hour.
Yeah.